guys, welcome to Better Bachelor. This is Joker with a face for radio and a voice for print. Tonight, I'm going to tell you a story about my travels abroad as well as an article from The Atlantic titled The Virtues of Isolation. And I'm so lazy tonight, I decided to name that the title of my thumbnail. But it's a good article, and it talks about the benefits of spending time alone and the psychological boon or the advantage that you can get from it. And for me, if you look at the thumbnail of the video, I'll put a picture of it next to me here if I remember when I'm editing. But when I spent time alone, and the picture actually on this mountain, this is Mount Salcantay in Peru. And it was after I spent 2 weeks in the Amazon doing ayahuasca. And then I went to Cusco, and I tried the local markets and the fresh food. And I had to do a lot of research and found an alpaca sweater that was like legit alpaca, not some of the fake cheap ones that you can find. And I enjoyed my time in the mountains. And that trip, as a matter of fact, pretty much around the time that I had that photo taken in the mountains, was really the last time I cared what other people think of me. It's kind of a weird thing to talk about, but a lot of times when I tell this story, people they actually feel sad for me, or they feel sorry for me, or it makes them think like, oh, how lonely and what an awful, sad life it must be. But the truth of the matter is that once you hit this kind of place in your life, the immeasurable power, the immeasurable peace of mind that it brings you is life-changing. And so this article directly references that. But after I finished Peru and I came home, I had quit my job, I sold everything. And some of you have heard this story before, so I'm not gonna go into deep depths about it. But I sold everything I owned, I donated a lot of stuff, and I basically bought an 85 liter backpack. Packed way too many things into it, now that I know better. And I spent the next year and change hitchhiking and taking buses and traveling around the world. And I did 32, 33 countries. And the experience, many people would say, my gosh, changing currencies and trying to learn the language, like when you go get off a train in Japan and it's in some of the small prefectures, and there's no English signs. You know, trying to figure out these things can be very intimidating. But when you realize that no one really cares, and I'm going to get into this, but and some of you guys, it may bum you out, but don't look at it that way. Because, again, once you kind of absorb this, you will feel so much better about yourself in time, once you actually fully absorb it, not just hearing it. But realizing that you're not long for this world. And, you know, were I to disappear tomorrow, with my days on this planet end tomorrow, many of you'd be like, oh, no more videos from him. I wonder if he retired, maybe he gave it up. You might joke that I'm enjoying a cute thing down in Southeast Asia, retired in my own little cabin or something like that. And given time, though, you'd forget my channel even existed. I'd be I'd come up in conversations like Tom Likas does every once in a while. But beyond that, no one's really going to care when I'm not here anymore. And very few people will care when you're not here. I've seen friends, a friend of mine, John, passed away in a motorcycle accident, and everybody was, I can't believe this happened. And, you know, well, we need to remember this. And he was such a great guy. And a week later, life was back to normal after his funeral. So this talks about the virtues of isolation. I'm going to get reading on this because I didn't come to just ramble about my own stories here. But I'm going to mix in some of my experiences with this so that you guys have an understanding. Because, you know, when, like, I've made comments before, because some people say, hey, you look younger without a beard. And I've been told I look, you know, in my mid-30s by some people. Now, after the bug, I've gained enough weight. I probably don't look so good. And then some of you guys leave in the comments, dude, you don't look young at all. As a matter of fact, you look older than you actually are. And that's fine. And some say I look good with a beard and without a beard. But my point is, it doesn't matter, because external things don't impact me anymore. And I think that's kind of what they're talking about in this article. So let me jump into it here before I ramble on. They say from The Atlantic, this is written by Brent Crane, and it's called The Virtues of Isolation. Under the right circumstances, choosing to spend time alone can be a huge psychological boon. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. To me, it was life-altering. I'll say that much. In the 1980s, Italian journalist and author Tiziano Terzani, after many years of reporting across Asia, hold himself up in a cabin in Ibukari Prefecture in Japan. For a month, I had no one to talk to except my dog, Baoli, he wrote in his travelogue, a fortune teller told me. Terzani passed the time with books, observing nature, listening to the wind in the trees, watching butterflies, enjoying silence. For the first time in a long while, he felt free from the incessant anxieties of daily life. At last, I had time to have time. Now, in the 80s, of course, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have cell phones. You had TV. You had newspaper. Those were pretty much, matter of fact, in the 80s, you didn't have pagers. You didn't have, I mean, maybe depending on when in the 80s, like MTV, I think, came out in like 1984, 85, something like that. You maybe had 13 channels on TV. But even getting away from that noise and that bustle back then at first it's miserable when you're not used to it. It's very uncomfortable. You feel bored, you feel fidgety. And the way I actually got over this and got into the place where I got so happy was by when I was hitchhiking, many of the areas that I went had no cell phone. They had no place to plug in your phone. Go to Iceland and the distance between gas stations is 300 kilometers. So I go into a gas station, I eat to my heart's content, mostly yogurt and bananas, and maybe grabbed a couple of Snickers bars for the backpack because I was burning so many calories a day. And you just start out, and the next place, let me correct, I had jars of peanut butter with tortilla rolls that I bought from Bonus, which is one of the grocery stores there. And so I had that in the bag. So if I had to go a week going 300 and some odd kilometers without another place, I could still make food. And of course, you could get water out of any of the glacial runoff out there. It's incredibly clean water. And so I set out hitchhiking, and some days I'd get a ride for a ways. As a matter of fact, I got a ride out to Isafjord. A retired guy gave me a ride out there in one day, showed me around. But I'd spend many days purposefully not hitchhiking, not sticking out my thumb, and just walking, I don't know, the 25 to 30 miles in a day, which would be, if math serves me right, 60 kilometers, something like that, in one day. And then I'd set up a tent in a pasture, usually a sheep pasture, where I could find fencing. And I'd sleep for the night, and it's legal there. And I'd do this day after day after day. Eventually, you're out of cell phone range, that you don't have a place to plug in. I had a little solar panel that I hung off my back, but many of the days were so cloudy and chilly, even in July, that I couldn't charge it. And you're forced to have nothing. Dead phone, no music to listen to. So you try to, I'd power it off, then I'd power it on, take a few pictures, power it off again to try to save the energy that I may have gotten from the last gas station. And I'd go days, and there's nothing. There's no, you have no music to listen to. There's no cell phone signal or connection. There's no one to talk to. Cars would pass by, and even though I wasn't thumbing for a ride, a lot of times people would offer me a ride because they know the distances between the cities is huge out in Iceland, and where there's absolutely nothing. And I said, no, I'm fine. Thank you very much. I'm just enjoying nature and the hike. And I do this for several days. And what it did is without the, you know, when you log onto Twitter and see the new current politics, or you see a new article that agitates you about men being treated poorly, or something, world news, whatever, there's always something occupying your mind. And there's never time to just let your mind go, to let it take you to places where you may not necessarily want it to go. And when it goes to those dark places, you have to think about them. You can try to push them off, but reality is you have nothing else to think about. And so it becomes a thing, and you have to kind of settle into it a little bit. So, and I found that that's really where I found peace of mind, where you start to all of a sudden realize that the universe and the world and everything is so much bigger than you are, that these big things that happen in your life that feel monumental and earth-changing and life-altering are really nothing in the grand scheme of things. And when you can put yourself in to that understanding that you are but an ant on the planet, that you're nothing, while some that may strike fear into you, to the rest of us, it allows you to understand that what I do doesn't matter. So let me do whatever I want, whatever that makes me happy and whatever moves me forward in life. I hope that makes sense to you guys. Let me continue on. But Terzani's embrace of seclusion was relatively unusual. Humans have long stigmatized solitude. It has been considered an inconvenience, something to avoid, a punishment, a realm of loners. Science has often aligned it with negative outcomes. Freud, who linked solitude with anxiety, noted that in children, the first phobias relating to situations are those of darkness and solitude. Yes, and for children that may be true, but we're not children. We're grown men. Some of you are grown women. We're grown people. We're grown adults. And to learn to embrace the power of that, I remember a military, when I was in military training, and it was during Air Base Ground Defense, ABGD, they call it in the Air Force. We were doing training at night, and one of the guys said, man, I hate, he was talking to our trainer, and he said, man, I hate being out here in the night. You never know what's out there. And our trainer said, yes, but think of it this way. What if you're the one they need to be afraid of? What if you are the darkness? Instead of considering yourself as the prey, think of yourself as the hunter. And so get into a position or a mindset of, it's dark. It's now my opportunity to proceed with, you know, the counterattack or whatever else we were training for. And that mindset's the same thing, is that when you're alone, to some people that strikes such great fear of, no one loves me, no one cares about me, it wouldn't matter to anybody if I disappeared tomorrow. And to some people that makes them very sad. But to other people, like myself and others that have learned to adopt this, it gives you an incredible sense of freedom, because it doesn't, no one else really truly cares what you do. Perhaps your family might, maybe a loved one might. But if you can tell them in earnest that you're happy and you're doing the right thing for yourself, then who cares what they think? And this gives you the freedom to travel cheaply, to live on a beach, be a beach bum, to do whatever your heart desires without any social pressures. To continue on, I hope I pronounce this right, John Cacioppo, a modern social neuroscientist who has extensively studied loneliness, what he calls chronic perceived isolation, contends that beyond damaging our thinking powers, isolation can even harm our physical health. But increasingly, scientists are approaching solitude as something that, when pursued by choice, can prove therapeutic. And I think that's a big difference, as many people say, I'm not given the choice. This is forced isolation, and it makes me unhappy. I think if you then use that to your advantage and you actually pursue the benefits of being alone, that's where you can actually grow out of this. They continue on. This is especially true in times of personal turbulence, when the instinct is often for people to reach outside of themselves for support. When people are experiencing crisis, it's not always just about you. It's about how you are in society, explains Jack Fong, a sociologist at California State Polytechnic University, who has studied solitude. When people take these moments to explore their solitude, not only will they be forced to confront who they are, they might just learn a little bit about how to outmaneuver some of the toxicity that surrounds them in a social setting. So this is one of the things that I was talking about with social media today, and these e-girls and the OnlyFans and getting all the likes and all the validation and all the posts and all the acclaim and all the virtue signaling on social media, it is a false sense of accomplishment. It is a false sense of people caring what you think or what you post. It's all fake. And because of this, it is people don't realize, or people may realize, but they choose to ignore the fact that these people really don't care what you say. They really don't, I mean, it just doesn't matter. But people chase after this because it gives them a false sense of happiness. You know, as a YouTuber, I have weeks where my views are through the roof. I might have 800,000 views in 2 days. Then more recently, I might have 200, 250,000 views in 2 days. One could say, oh man, I'm doing much worse. I must not be doing something right. Maybe my videos aren't being as appreciated as much. And you can get into this inner, or you can just say, it is what it is, and you move on. That's what understanding, it doesn't matter what the outside world pushes in. Okay, let me keep reading on here. In other words, when people remove themselves from the social context of their lives, they are better able to see how they're shaped by that context. Thomas Merton, a Trappist monk and writer who spent years alone, held a similar notion. We cannot see things in perspective until we cease to hug them to our bosom, he writes in Thoughts in Solitude. Much of this self-reconfiguring happens through what Fung calls existentializing moments, mental flickers of clarity, which can occur during inward-focused solitude. Fung developed this idea from the late German-American sociologist Kurt Wolff's surrender and catch theory of personal epiphany. When you have these moments, don't fight it. Accept it for what it is. Let it emerge calmly and truthfully, and don't resist it, Fung says. Your alone time should not be something that you are afraid of. I have to wholeheartedly agree with this. Now, I was not completely alone for the whole time I traveled. Obviously, I would get rides from people when I was hitchhiking, and I would talk to them, and they'd share a little bit about themselves. I'd share a little bit about my story. We would go on our way. So I did have personal interaction. But when I went up to Hornstrandir, which is the northwestern peninsula in Iceland, it is cut off from the main isle of Iceland by a glacier. And they take you there by ferry, and whatever food you have and whatever water you have, or well, whatever container you have, because again, you can get the water right from the land, and you need a tent and rainproof clothing, and your gear is your gear. There is no cell phone, there is no GPS, there is nothing. And they drop you off on an island, and you have a return ticket. I told them I wanted 15 days. They told me, really, no, we strongly advise not to do that. And I insisted, and finally they agreed to let me go for 12 or 10. Maybe it was 11. So it was north of 10 days. I think it was 10 or 12 days. I forget now. But I went there. I got dropped off, and they let me loose to do whatever I wanted. And they have camps, and so you hike. And all you have to do is you have to hike, and you have to sleep on the beaches because you can't sleep on the rocky ground because it's volcanic lava rock, and there's moss. And you can't sleep on the moss because it's about this deep and it's soaking wet like a sponge. So you can't put your tent down or anything, or you'd soak in and you'd be absolutely soaked. And even in the summertime, it was, some nights were 50 degrees, 45 degrees with very strong wind, rain. You're always kind of damp and wet. So it's chilly, but you can't start a fire because there is no firewood. It's moss and volcanic rock. So your only choice is to go from beach to beach, which is 12 to 18 kilometers, up 500, 700 meters, down, back down, up and down. So you'd be doing at least 8 to 10 miles, and going up and down hills. They were very steep. You're exhausted. You're wiped by the time you get to the next camp, but you have no choice but to continue on, because unless you want to just lay down on a rock and sleep. So this type of challenge, this type of solitude, this type of pressure, well, not pressure, but the push to keep your momentum going, that you must keep hiking, you must keep going. You know, you have to use the bathroom, you go 200 meters away from running water, and you go, and you put your toilet paper in a bag, a Ziploc bag, seal it up, and put it right back in your backpack. I mean, that's how isolated you are. This forces you to go back to kind of the original man, so to speak, which is, it's you versus nature. And thank goodness they let you take food, or I would have been in a lot of trouble. But you shouldn't be afraid of this kind of thing. And this is why, to me, travel has changed my life, because it really lets you get out there and challenge yourself. And it unlocks so much of not only your mind, but your physical potential, that it opens a new world for you. It really, really does. Challenge, and that's why I challenge you guys so many times to, hey, get off social media. Make sure to go to, get the gym and push yourself. Make sure you give yourself a goal. Because the more times in your life that you say, I didn't know I was capable of doing that, but I just did that, it expands your expands your knowledge. It expands your self-worth. It's amazing. Okay, let me keep going. He continues on. Yet at the same time, it is not only about being alone. It's a deeper internal process, notes Matthew Bowker, a psychoanalytic political theorist at Medale College, who has researched solitude. Productive solitude requires internal exploration, a kind of labor which can be uncomfortable, even excruciating. It might take a little bit of work before it turns into a pleasant experience. But once it does, it becomes maybe the most important relationship anybody ever has, the relationship you have with yourself. Kind of going back to what I was talking about, that once you really, and you know, there are books out there on this kind of thing. You can just go out and do it like I did. Just throw yourself into it and say, that's it, I'm forced alone. No phone, no anything, no content, because you don't have a choice. Then when you say, oh, maybe I'll just jump on the phone for a minute, or maybe I'll just listen to a podcast, you have no choice. Now, I went to the extremes, mind you, but I cannot, unless you go through this, it is very hard for me to express how much it opens up your life for you. And it may, I love myself. There are times where I enjoy being alone for such long periods of time that when I'm interrupted by a text, a phone call, anything, I actually get frustrated. I actually get to the point where I'll turn everything off and it's just me and the dog sitting somewhere on vacation, on a beach, whatever, finding a way to get as far away from other people as possible. And then I just spend time thinking. Not a few minutes, not even necessarily hours, maybe days. And it, again, I cannot express the virtues of how great this is. Because it forces you to start working through everything in your life, the good, the bad, the ugly. You start reminiscing, you start working through how you should have handled certain things. It's like a room cleaning or a house cleaning, except for your mind. They say, yet today in our hyper-connected society, Bowker believes that solitude is more devalued than it has been in a long time. He points to a recent study at the University of Virginia in which several participants, a quarter of the women and two-thirds of the men, chose to subject themselves to electric shock rather than be alone with their thoughts. Bowker sees this heightened distaste for solitude playing out in pop culture as well. For example, vampires used to be portrayed in stories as secluded hermits, where now you're more likely to see them on camera as sexy socialites, he notes. I would guess that would be some of the Twilight movies and some of the other things. They continue on, even though many great thinkers have championed the intellectual and spiritual benefits of solitude, Lao Tzu, Moses, Nietzsche, Emerson, Wolfe, how much better is silence, the coffee cup, the table? Many modern humans seem hell-bent on avoiding it. Every time we have a chance to go running, we plug in our headphones. Every time we sit in the car, we listen to NPR, laments Bowker. I mean, my students today tell me they can't go to the bathroom without their phones on. When I do short, small things, you know, I'm like when I'm reading an article, I might have jazz or some other relaxing music on in the background. That's doing two things at once. Sometimes when I'm looking for articles to read for this, I'm also watching a movie that I've seen 800 times just to have something on there. So most of the time I do listen to music and podcasts and things like that. Because when I'm walking through a store or doing something like that, I like to be isolated from other people, their chatter and things like that. But when I go running, I like upbeat music to kind of push me along. But when I know I'm going to have an extended period of time alone, I rarely listen to anything. And I think it also has to do with Stoicism. You know, when you look back at many of the great Stoics, most of them were long before anything other than perhaps orchestral music or going to an event for music. You certainly didn't have a way to carry music or podcasts or things with you. They spent a lot of their time alone in contemplation. And I think, again, I think that's incredible. This is not to say that true solitude necessarily requires an absence of stimuli. Rather, the value of solitude depends on whether an individual can find an interior solitude within themselves, says Bowker. Everyone is different in that regard. Some people can go for a walk or listen to music and feel that they are deeply in touch with themselves. Others cannot. Generally, Bowker contends that our mistrust of solitude has consequences. For one, we've become a more groupish society, he says. In a dangerous place to be, Identify Conflict, Trauma in Higher Education, an upcoming book by Bowker, co-authored with David Levine, a psychoanalyst and the University of Denver, the author traces a line between the devaluing of solitude and the ongoing ideological conflicts afflicting college campuses. We're drawn to identity markers and to groups that help us define ourselves. In the simplest terms, this means using others to fill out our identities rather than relying on something internal, something that comes from within, Bowker says. Separating from the group, I would argue, is one of the things that universities should be facilitating more. And I agree with that, but they actually don't want you to be free thinking. They don't want you to learn stoicism. They don't want you to be a free thinker. They want you in with groupthink. Controlling a group with a group narrative is much easier, because if you fear being the outside person, if you fear being the lone wolf, so to speak, and having everyone point their finger at you and shunning you for your outside thoughts, you become uncontrollable. You become someone that is beyond social adaptation. They cannot wrangle you to behave the way that they want you to. That makes you extremely powerful and in some cases extremely dangerous, which is why you should do it. When you get into groupthink and you fall into the, well, I want to be liked by all these people and I want to go with the flow, that's where you're going to have, that's where they want you nowadays. You know, universities have stopped teaching, truly teaching, decades ago now at this point. I would say that you can learn more being by yourself and learning on your own than you can by anybody else feeding you this. Now, believe it or not, I'm only about a third through this article, so I'm gonna stop it here. I'm gonna leave the link to the article down below, but I'm gonna leave you a summary. Because I think this kind of gives you an idea of the article and my thoughts on this, is that when you gentlemen and or ladies, I guess, when you decide that you want to grow and you want to be, I call it being a bulletproof monk. And what I mean by that is that you cannot be insulted. You cannot be hurt. You cannot be put down. You cannot be shamed. You cannot be controlled. You cannot be manipulated. That you become so strong in your own sense of self that you no longer worry about what anyone else thinks of you. And where the real, and this comes in handy when it comes to dating and how to handle your emotions when it comes to dating or with women or with family or with anybody that would control you. It helps you when it comes to politics so you can make up your own mind and you don't have to necessarily jump on camp A or camp B. It will make you feel alone only in the fact that you realize that you are unlike anyone else in this world and that there is no one else like you. And that you are truly alone. And for some people, this frightens them, but we're all alone. The only difference is how much of yourself do you give up? How much of your personality? How much of your value? How much of what you are in this world? How much of that do you give up to try to fit in with others? And when I was younger, I remember feeling, sometimes like I was a doppelganger. Like feeling like I don't really belong to this group, but I want to fit in, and so I kind of go along with this group. And then in other times, I'd want to fit in with this group, so I would kind of go along to fit in with this group. And I did that often enough that I said, I realized that I didn't know who I was. Like, I'm not me. I'm not Joker. I'm this Joker when I'm that group, and I'm this Joker when I'm with this group, and I'm this Joker when I'm with this group. But then when it came down to who am I had no idea. I didn't really know what I wanted. I didn't really know where I didn't take a firm stand on anything in my world. And that was frightening to me, because then I was like, I'm not a part of anybody. Like, no one, I don't fit anything around me. I'm weird. I'm unique. I just don't fit in. And this is very scary. I felt like that for the first 38 years of my life. So it's not something that just I had an epiphany one day and I'm like, oh, I got this. Nah, it's something you have to work through. It's like chewing nails. It's very difficult. But when you come out on the other side of it, you'll find out all of a sudden that you're free, that I don't care if someone compliments me. I mean, it's nice and I thank them for it, and it's nice to hear, but it doesn't make me want to change to get more compliments. If somebody insults you, it doesn't matter. It makes everything that's outside of you irrelevant. Now, that doesn't mean that you shut yourself off from the outside world and become a hermit, but it also means that given the opportunity of, hey, would you go to this island and take a month's worth of food with you and live by yourself and try to build your own shelter and try to scrounge a way to survive and try to make sure that you could make it on your own, that's a challenge, not a fear. And that's where a lot of survivalists get into kind of learning this thing, because they want the challenge of going back to the roots of being human, of survival, of finding water, of finding warmth, of finding shelter, to stay dry, to survive. When you do that, you realize everything else is bonus. Everything else is fluffy and soft and wonderful. So if your internet goes out one day and you're right in the middle of your favorite, online game, or your power goes out during the football game, I've done it before myself, where you might rant and curse and say, oh, and you're freaking out trying to find maybe I can get a phone and see if I can dial up and download that game, the football game. So, or maybe I'll go out in the car and dial it in on the radio so I can keep listening. I'm that guy too. All that doesn't go away. But what it does is it means that when things start getting hairy and out of your control and you start getting nervous or scared, or that leaves you, it becomes more of a, okay, it's game plan time, or it's now I have to find something different to do. And when you go through the struggles of living, water, food, finding a shelter, you realize that what our ancestry had to go through to make it from day to day, then you realize what life's really about. Then you realize what that animal side of being a human is about. And it takes away all the creature comforts. When you get down to that level, everything above that is easy. So the breakups are easy. The angst, the social media, the people yelling at you, the guy that wants to get you into a fight with you down at the grocery store because you're wearing a hat he doesn't like, whatever. All that that's just fluff, because you've gone down to the base level. The hierarchy of needs, you went right down to the cement. So, guys, I'll leave it there. I hope this intrigues you a little bit. I hope, read the rest of this article. I'll leave a link. Look up on survivalism. Look up on stoicism. Look up on being alone. Look at learning about the self, the ego, learning about id, learning about the psychology. Why do I think this way? Why does this make me feel afraid? Why do I want to fit in with other people? Learn the whys. And this is a very puff piece on it, but it's kind of a fun read to kind of get it introduced to you. Read about why you are human. Why do I think the way I do? Why am I the way I am? And once you kind of start working through this stuff and you start getting through it, you'll realize that nothing but you matters. You and your survival and the simple things in life. And then upon that, you can build. But so many of us came in at the level up here, which is, I've always had electricity, I've always had clean water, I've always had a toilet, I've always had food right over there at the grocery store, I've always had life easy. This is easy street. So then when people want to complain about, well, I'm going to go riot, or I'm going to go protest, or I'm going to go complain, or I didn't get the raise at my job, or this girl told me to hit the bricks, or that's all above the easy stuff. There's a long range between this and rock bottom. And I think finding that rock bottom will help you realize everything above that is actually beautiful. The pain, the misery, the suffering itself is what it is to be human. And you can actually find pleasure in the suffering. But that's a whole nother story for another day. Guys, I will leave it there. If you'd like to support my work, links are below as always. If you have, thank you very much. And thank you for those that have reached out to me on PayPal and on my locals, betterbachelor.locals.com. I appreciate that all very much. Guys, that's it for me. This is Better Bachelor. I'm Joker. Remember, check it out. Learn more about this stuff. This is your key to living the rest of your life carefree and happy, no matter what happens.